It's the rasping voice that puts you off. After 5 minutes of listening to recordings of W.H. Auden reading his own poems, you've had enough. But there's something else that disturbs in the world-weary voice apart from the buzzsaw vocal tones. This was someone who had it all. One of the greatest English-speaking poets of the 20th century, he began life with a fine mind, an excellent education, immense self-confidence, and a cultural antennae second to none. Recognition came swiftly to him without the long wait in obscurity that was the lot of many poets of that time. Even as a young man, he was acknowledged on both sides of the Atlantic as an immense talent who could not be ignored. Leftish when it was fashionable to be so, enough money to travel where he wanted to, an excellent network of friends among the intelligentsia, life just kept getting better. He even had the foresight to move to America and establish a new life there with his boyfriend, just as the war was getting underway. But slowly, almost imperceptibly, from this point on, things began to change. While still incapable of writing or saying a dull word, the original fire is losing its lustre. It's as though certain midlife jumps have not been taken well. He becomes a man who does not reach to the limit of his ability. The immense gifts are not tested to the full. The that which could have been does not emerge into the light of day. It's this jaded note of internal disappointment that sets me on edge as I listen to him reading. Somehow he's missed the mark and he knows it. And this self-knowledge has been received with a certain cynicism and bitterness. It's the horizon of our lives, the certainty that there is an end point that leads us to make these kinds of reckoning of our days and of what they were all about. When will the end come? The Thessalonians asked Paul. I don't know exactly, comes the reply, but there will be an end, and then we'll come face to face with the giver of gifts. How much time can I realistically expect of the lifespan that's left to me? Irrespective of when Jesus decides to return, all of us have a personal eschaton to expect. God rules a line through our life when we die. It's that end point that provides the perspective from which we measure the degree of satisfaction that we feel about our lives. There is about my artistic endeavours what I would call a quality of joy. That's how the singer Dietrich Fischer-Dieskau summed up what he felt about a lifetime in recording studios and concert halls. I guess that is how we would all like to feel about the way we've exercised our more modest talents. The reckoning of our lives, whether on the part of God or us, seems to be based on whether there's been a spirit of adventure and striving animation in what we did. Consider what happened to the cautious investor in today's gospel passage. The Message, Eugene Peterson's brilliant biblical paraphrase, puts the punchline this way. The master was furious. That's a terrible way to live. It's criminal to live cautiously like that. If you knew I was after the best, why did you do less than the least? Take the $1,000 and give it to the one who risked the most, and get rid of this play it safe who won't go out on a limb. This is a verdict the church has to think about too. Matthew's gospel words come out of a struggle that's going on between those who want to put a fence around the Torah to keep the treasure of God's good things safe from the world, and the missionary activists of Matthew's church who consider that the faith is for export and that the treasure should be given away in a daring manner. Christians of our time and place tend to be people who are cautious and prudent. That's just as well when we're making decisions about, for instance, beautiful buildings like this that require us to be responsible, careful, and thoughtful. But there's a balancing message from the scriptures this morning about the need to make sure that we're practicing Christianity and not cautianity. Many wonderful gifts have come our way as a result of starting out on our Christian walk. We are going to be assessed on the boldness and originality we showed in deploying them. Patience is required of us while we're waiting for Jesus to come back. But just as important is the kind of get up and go that makes sure that we make the best possible use of God's gifts. We are a mixture of personality styles who make up the church, low energy, high energy, born leaders and faithful followers, impulsive risk takers and calm and steady deliberators. Within the bond of interdependent connection that's church, we get the best out of all these styles as we garner their strengths in doing God's work. Yes, every one of us should come to a sober estimate of whether we are a one-talent person, a two-talent person, or a five-talent person. But the question is, will we and can we deploy these talents in such a way as to take our place in that zone of God's future fulfilled purposes and so come to know the life that really is life? What matters is the overall tone of each Christian community. Are we on the move, active in God's affairs, giving a good account of ourselves as resourceful stewards of our God-given gifts? Or are we weighed down with inertia, entropy and apathy, that tired tone that drags any community down in its expectation of getting anything done? Each one of us contributes something to that overall tone. A preacher I heard not so long ago put it well when he warned against leading complicated, disorganized lives that hinder us so that we limp when we want to run. The amount of psychic energy we have to contribute to a church that's getting somewhere will depend upon the extent to which we have joyfully reached down to develop all the gifts within us. As others listen to our voice, may they reflect, this person sounds as though they're alive. We're now approaching the season of Advent in which we reflect on the last things. It will be a time to hope for and long for eschatological transformation, by which I mean the desire for the powers of the age to come to break into our present situation in such a way as to remake us as our true selves. Forces of sin and evil fragment us to the point where we barely know who we are. The forces of the future heavenly kingdom and country draw us together into a unified whole. They make Jesus present to us in such a way as to remake us after his pattern. He is the truest human being who ever lived. As this put together, reassembled again, brothers and sisters, we are ready for the glory to come. This future world promised in the Advent hope is not something utterly different from the world we know now. It was there as latent promise and as a seed in nutri within the creation from the beginning. I'll leave the last word to David Bentley Hart. The Christian should see two realities at once, one world, as it were, within another. One, the world as we know it, in all its beauty and terror, grandeur and dreariness, delight and anguish. And the other, the world in its first and ultimate truth, not simply nature, but creation, an endless sea of glory, radiant with the beauty of God in every part, innocent of all violence.